Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, Upgrade listeners. This is Alice, and this week we're bringing you an episode from the Upgrade Archives. It's How to Find Love with matchmaker Dr. Frankie. We hope you enjoy it, and we'll be bringing you a new episode next week.
Hello, and welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at Lifehacker, where we help you improve your life 1 week at a time. I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And today we're talking about how to find love. It's officially cuffing season, or so some call the fall and winter months, where cold weather and prolonged time spent indoors cause people to want to couple up and hunker down. But how do we even begin to find love in this messy world of online dating, ghosting, and benching?
To get some tips, we interviewed a real-life matchmaker, Dr. Frankie, about why people are turning to old-school intermediaries like herself to find love.
People are looking for people who have passion in their lives, that have either a big career, or it doesn't even have to be a big career, but it's something that they're passionate about.
Then we have a recipe for a sexy three-ingredient cocktail from Lifehacker's Skillet editor, Claire Lower.
To me, there is nothing more seductive than a perfect martini.
Managing editor Virginia Smith goes over the principles of Tinder etiquette, or lack thereof, with etiquette expert Daniel Post-Senning.
Be honest. It's a core tenet of all good etiquette: consideration, respect, and honesty.
And of course, we'll finish with our upgrades of the week.
Melissa, I've got a question for you.
Hit me.
What the hell is benching?
You haven't been on the dating scene in a while.
It's been a long time.
I actually had not heard of it until we started doing this episode either. It's a fairly new term, not to be confused with ghosting.
Sure.
You know what benching is in sports?
Sure.
Tell me.
When somebody's put on the bench.
Perfect. That's right.
Okay.
Well, same thing with dating.
You put somebody on the bench.
No, it's like...
So like you're holding them there because you might use them in the future? Is that the idea?
Yeah. You're kind of like keeping them in your contacts, keeping the fire burning, but you're not actually playing them.
Okay.
So maybe you're, you know, trading texts, but you're never actually making plans.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of like keeping you on the back burner, keeping you in the mix, but not actually doing anything to show they're legitimately trying to start a relationship with you.
Okay.
Okay. Not to be confused with breadcrumbing.
What is breadcrumbing?
Breadcrumbing is when someone kind of keeps you around, gives you just enough to keep you interested, right? Like, so they'll text you on your birthday just to say, hey, or text you on Friday night just to be like, hey, what are you doing? Hope you have a good weekend. But then they pull back and they don't actually make plans with you. Or they pop up, you know, around a holiday, or they just keep tossing you enough just to keep you interested, but they... again, don't actually do anything to further the relationship. So I feel like all of this is sort of text mediated, right?
Okay.
You're getting benched, or you're getting breadcrumbed, or you're getting ghosted. And that all has to do with like the cadence of contact or lack thereof on electronic mediums.
Now, back when I was evaluating suitors.
Sure.
In the 19th century.
Right.
Those who lived to, you know, the age where you could suit each other. I was ghosted, but there was just no word for it.
I think that...
And I know you're not going to believe that I was ghosted.
I cannot believe you were ghosted. Who would ghost you?
It happened several times.
Well, I think that it was probably far easier to ghost.
Maybe they actually were dead, or they actually were ghosting
me. Right, exactly. Well, then I would imagine it was less prevalent, because I think that electronic communication allows us to be more irresponsible with our relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to disregard a text and just delete that text from your phone. A voicemail message would feel more consequential, or an answering machine message or a carrier pigeon
message. Calling someone's
message.
Answering service.
Right. From when
beeping
you were dating.
Their pager?
Exactly. Well, that was actually a little later than when you got hitched.
Sure.
I think it's harder to ignore someone's voice. Mm-hmm. I think that you're not in constant communication. Like, you weren't in constant communication the way that we are now.
Yeah.
With, it wasn't so easy just to drop somebody a line back in the day.
Yeah.
So all of this is an epidemic today, as mm-hmm. we know. And we are going to talk about it with some experts.
I can't wait.
I'm ready to fall in love. And now it's time for the interview, where we interview someone. This week, Alice and I chat with professional matchmaker Dr. Frankie.
Dr. Frankie is a psychologist with 9 years of clinical experience who decided to pursue her passion for matchmaking, working specifically with women in the LGBTQ community.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you become a matchmaker and relationship expert?
It's kind of just in my blood, in my bones. From a very early age, I loved networking and connecting with people. And I found that it was really easy for me to strike up conversation and to also intuitively get a sense, like a gut sense of two people that would get on really well. And it started in my teens, believe it or not. So it was a hobby. I would just kind of go out and meet people all different places. And I'd find out if they're single, and then I would coordinate an introduction, not even realizing that I was becoming this little matchmaker. So fast forward, I became a clinical psychologist and ended up working with singles, couples, families, and trying to just figure out where I really wanted to be. And I kept gravitating towards couples and singles that were dating and struggling with dating and figuring out how to have a long-term happy relationship. It just developed into, you know, something where I merged the two together, my hobby of matchmaking and also my clinical experience of being a psychologist, a therapist.
So tell us how the process works. Like, I'm not familiar with the modern matchmaker. Take us through how you work with a client.
So the first step in the process is completing a confidential free online profile. When somebody does that, it goes into a large database that is only browsed by me and my team. Following that, if they're interested in becoming a client, then I either reach out to them or they reach out to me and we do a consultation, which is a compatibility interview, where I get to learn a ton about them. So I ask questions like, you know, their deal breakers, their must-haves, their relationship and family history, what they love to do, what they're looking for in a partner. And I exclusively work with lesbians and bisexual women for matchmaking, but I do coaching with everybody. So they usually have a preference whether they're attracted to women who are more feminine or more masculine, butch or androgynous. So lots of questions figuring out what they're really looking for. In that interview, I can figure out whether I can take them on as a client because I don't take everybody on. I only take on people that I feel like I could potentially match. And I work with people all over the country. And even in the most, you know, last 5 years or so, people are contacting me overseas and wanting to hire me as a matchmaker. But depending on my database and how big we are in that location will determine whether I can take them on.
What makes somebody a good candidate for matching?
You've got to have something to offer, right? The package has got to be good. And it makes it hard for me if it's not as your matchmaker, right? People are looking for people who have passion in their lives, that have either a big career, or it doesn't even have to be a big career, but it's something that they're passionate about. That's really important to people. People also want to be matched with others that are kind and loving and affectionate, good people. They'll say, you know, find somebody, Dr. Frankie, that follows the golden rule. That's just good. That means well, that wants to communicate when conflict comes up, that doesn't just storm out of the room or doesn't stonewall. People really want communication, maturity, and availability. Like, we're all really, really busy. So even somebody who has a big career, that they're, you know, they're mindful around time management, where they can make time for a relationship and have a good sense of balancing their career that they're passionate about and also prioritizing their relationship.
Where are the people who come to you in their lives? Are they in a certain stage in their lives where they're tired of dating apps? How would you characterize them?
More recently, in recent years, it's been they're burnt out from dating apps. They're tired of being mistreated. They're tired of the poor etiquette of online dating, and they want me just to find them solid potential matches that show up for their date, that look like they say that they do, that sound like, you know, the way that they describe themselves, that can communicate after the date if they're interested in having a second date Or if they're not interested, saying, I don't feel there's a, you know, romantic connection and so on. They're coming to me because they're really disillusioned and frustrated with dating today.
And so this poor etiquette of online dating, what does that look like?
Oh my gosh. It's pretty terrible. And it's getting worse with like every month it's getting worse. So it's pretty commonplace for people to engage with somebody online and feel like there's a connection and it's going to go somewhere. At least it's going to lead to a first date. And then the person disappears. No word. They've just vanished, evaporated. That also happens after several dates, two or three dates. And then out of nowhere, the individual just disappears with no explanation. So that's ghosting. I'm sure you're familiar. It's become really, really common. There's also a lot of love bombing that goes on where it's just you get flooded with so much attention. Like, you know, you go on your first date and this person's like, ah, you're my soulmate. I can't believe I finally met you. I've been doing online dating for 3 years. And all of a sudden, after three, four dates, they're just gone. So behaviors like that, which are really, it doesn't take many experiences of disappointment like that to really taint your trust in the online dating process. And then what I've noticed happens is that people start to act out in the ways that they disliked being treated without even being aware of it because they're so guarded and fearful, right, of having that experience happen again that they themselves become elusive.
It seems like people might go to a matchmaker as an antidote to that because they want not only for other people to be accountable or responsible for the relationship that they've entered into, but they also want that accountability themselves.
Absolutely. That's it. You just named it. It's accountability. And that's what online dating is lacking. So when I coordinate a date, I have a relationship with my client and my catch. So women in my catch pool are catches. And nobody wants to upset Dr. Frankie, right? They know that I'm going to hear about it. So there's accountability.
Right.
Because I have a relationship with them, right? That they want to maintain because they all want to go on dates again. And they know if they screw up, I'm not going to be happy because it doesn't reflect well on me as a matchmaker.
So do you have rules that you give them before they go in on a date? Do you have like standards that you set?
I do. I don't allow them to have more than two drinks because then you start to become disinhibited, right? And you say things and you do things that you're going to later regret. They're not allowed to have sex after the first or second date. They need to let each other know if they're not interested or if they are interested. They don't need to defer to me for that. We're all adults. So I say, you know, if you're feeling good about it, ask her out again. What's also happening is, you know, with the online dating experience is like people are delaying in expressing their interest. So if you go on a date and it's great, your first date, and you even talk about getting together for a second date, the other person seems to be lagging or doesn't commit to a date. You know, says, let me get back to you. And then 2 weeks will go by. When that happens, what does that do? It sends the signal or the message that that person's not interested and we lose momentum. So it ends up sabotaging the date, ultimately, the second date, because there's negative feelings attached to that delay.
People are playing a numbers game, right? Like they don't want to commit because with online dating, there's sort of, depending on where you live, an unlimited pool of candidates for the one.
Yes. There's also this feeling that like, we're told, right, all around us through advertisements and media that we deserve better, you know? And I think with this whole swiping mentality, we're just thinking to ourselves, well, there might be somebody better. So even if you go on a date with somebody that you're connecting with and you feel good about it, you're still kind of hooked on the idea that there may be somebody right around the corner that might be a better match for me. When the truth is, there isn't a perfect match. None of us are perfect. We're all imperfect beings. But we're told that that person's out there for us. So there's a little bit of an addiction that happens too, where there's actually a chemical reaction. When we get a hit of serotonin, that makes us feel good. You know, we're connecting time and again, even if it's through a swipe, with somebody who expresses interest. So it's very hard to disconnect from that. Because you get this, there's a chemical hit also. So it's two pieces where we're told that we deserve better and we should get what we want. And then also we get addicted to the hit of the attention.
Mm-hmm. So you also coach people, correct?
I do a lot of it, yes.
Do you coach them through their kind of use of dating apps?
I do. Some of my clients are online dating, so I coach them through that, and I help them to kind of put on a shield of armor I talk a lot about that. So if they're going to go into online dating, they need to know that X, Y, and Z is going to happen. You just need to expect it. You're going to be ghosted. You're going to be benched, which is like you kind of feel like this person's staying in touch with you, but you're not their priority. They've got other things going on. You can sense, you have that sixth sense that they're dating multiple people. That's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Love bombing is going to happen. Catfishing, where you're thinking this person may not even be real. There's something about their photos or the way they're communicating with me or their grammatical errors in their emails that isn't sitting right with me. Probably if you're feeling that, they're not real. All of that's going to happen. So expect it.
Will you like look through Tinder with them and say like this, don't, you know, this person is problematic?
This one's not for you.
Right? Sometimes clients will come to my office and be like, I want to show you this. What do you think? Because they're already feeling like it's suspect. Like if it looks too good to be true, then it is. So sometimes we'll do that. But I think that just in working with me, they get a sense of what to avoid, like what the red flags are. Because it's pretty obvious once you really, like your eyes are open or you're looking through the lens of, you know, 50% of these profiles are fake.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot of...
It's a high really? Percentage. It's somewhere up there.
Yeah. Like just they're not who they say they are at all?
Some are, you know... The photos are who they are, right? Are true, but then their narrative isn't. If you notice, many of the way that they respond to the descriptions of themselves and what they're looking for in a partner, it's almost like a formula. They say the same things. Long walks on the beach. I'm athletic. You know, I'm an outdoorsy person. There's this idea that you're supposed to say certain things in your profile, and that's what's going to be appealing. People are hiring people to write their profiles for them.
Right. Have you ever helped somebody craft their profile?
I have. But I help them to present themselves well, but honestly, why waste your time and somebody else's time presenting yourself in an inauthentic way? Because at the end, the truth is going to come out, right? It's inevitable that the person's going to realize, wait a minute, you're actually not athletic and you're quite sedentary and you haven't worked out in 5 years. They're going to figure that out.
Right. Just say, I'm an indoor person.
Absolutely. Just be honest. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time and wasting others' time. Yeah.
And so if you're looking for true love, what should you be focusing on? Like when you're getting ready to date, you know, everybody that I know is focusing on their insecurities and the fear of rejection. And what should you actually be focusing on? I'm suspecting it's not like that you need to lose 10 pounds.
Being your best self, like bringing your best self forward. And if you feel confident, whether you have a few extra pounds on you, you have 10 pounds on you, as long as you feel good about yourself and you're in a good mental headspace, that's great. You're gonna draw people to you that are also in a good mental headspace. So it starts with you. You know, you have to feel good about yourself. And lately, I've really been encouraging my clients to get offline and think about meeting people in your world. You know, people that are in proximity to you, maybe pay more attention to the people around you. Introduce yourself, make conversation when you're online waiting to get your Starbucks coffee in the morning. Maybe say hello to somebody. I think that we are going to make way more progress by having day-to-day interactions with people that are already in our world that we're looking down at our cell phones. We're not making an effort to connect with people around us.
That's the thing, though. Like, you go to a bar now and you're waiting for someone, and everybody around you at the bar, maybe they're also waiting for people, but everybody's on their phones. So there's yet another barrier to meeting people in the real world because everybody next to you is involved in their screen.
That's the problem. So somebody has to be bold and introduce themselves. Somebody has to break that habit because we're all doing that because we feel uncomfortable waiting at the bar alone. And also because we're addicted. It's just the go-to. You just do it. You don't even think about it. Like I have to sometimes, all of a sudden I realize, I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I on my phone? Like it dawns on me that I don't need to be, but it's so automatic. It's like a reflex.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're never actually there. Like you're never, ever going to meet anybody at the bar because you're talking to people who aren't there.
Exactly. So if we can just be bold, like we need to think about the fact that everybody in here wants to meet somebody. We're all here because we want to socialize. So be bold and break that barrier and strike up conversation because you have nothing to lose. At the end of the day, you're probably never going to see these people again. But you may, this may be a missed opportunity.
I'm thinking about all the ways in which we automate our lives so that we don't have to see people or talk to people. You know, like you could be waiting in line at Starbucks, but you could also have pre-ordered your Starbucks coffee so that you go in and pick it up and you don't wait in line, or you don't pick up your takeout food, you have it delivered. So we are constantly finding ways to have less contact with human beings. And of course, you know, Tinder is the ultimate way to, you know, have contact without actually having contact.
Exactly. And it just, it sort of, it keeps getting worse and we get more and more isolated. Rates of depression and anxiety are skyrocketing. We're all wanting the same thing. We want connection, but we're engaging in behaviors that actually prevent that real ability to connect. And the further we get from that, the harder it is, right? The harder it is to move towards it, because making connection with somebody who we don't know, there's all this unknown and unpredictability about it. So that in itself is uncomfortable. So we avoid it. And it just it's sort of like a reinforcing behavior. We just avoid it more and more. We're getting further and further away from exactly what we all want, which is human connection.
So to change the subject a little bit, tell us some stories of matchmaking that have had a happy ending. I think we all need those.
There's lots. I've been doing this a long time. It's been about a decade.
What are some of your favorites?
That I've been in business, but I've been doing it longer than that. Like I said, I started when I was a teenager, and now I'm almost 42. So the success stories usually happen around, you know, people that really want it. They really want a relationship. They're being honest with themselves. There are a good number of people that say that they want a relationship because their friends and family want them to be in a relationship. Like it makes them uncomfortable that they're single and they want them to be in a relationship because they think that they'll be happier. But you have to really want it. So my clients who really want it are successful through my services. There's also another piece where some clients, some of us have a long laundry list of things that we are looking to find in a partner. And a whole laundry list of, you know, deal breakers. And the more we add to that list, the more limited we are and the less successful we're going to be in finding somebody. So I always recommend just having three and knowing that not everybody is going to have the whole package. So success stories, you know, with my clients are people who are just like, they're more flexible. They're more open. Just yesterday, I talked to a client actually, and I was saying to her that, you know, there's somebody I really love to introduce her to, but this person has a few extra pounds on them. And I wanted to know how she felt about that. And she said, you know, I want to be open. If this person is a match for me in all these ways that are important, and she knows that I'm very well aware of what's important to her, but this person has some extra weight on them, she's like, of course I'm going to say yes. But there are certainly many people that wouldn't say yes. And they would reject this person that might very well be their soulmate or a potential life partner because they have a few extra pounds.
What you're saying also kind of goes against what we're always told, which is, you know, you find love when you're not looking for it. You hear that a lot.
Or to make a list of all the things that you want and focus on, you know, don't settle.
That's it. You're touching on what I was speaking about earlier, which is like, we deserve the best, right? You know, if we put in the effort, we deserve something really, you know, something great. And we do, it's true, but you also have to be realistic. And think about, I mean, I see this a lot too, where clients will say to me, and it, maybe it's a client that's overweight, for example, you know, she'll say to me, I want somebody who's super fit and gorgeous. And I'll have to say, well, you have to think about, are you super fit? Somebody who's super fit is really probably going to value fitness and diet and health. But they think that they can have something that they themselves don't possess, which is a disconnect right there.
Is that something that comes up frequently for people, like body types or weight?
Yes. People want, I mean, I'll tell you the number one things that I hear. They want beauty. They want somebody who's really attractive, somebody who's fit to average build. They want someone who's successful, that has a career. I mean, they'll specifically say, like, I'm not interested really in dating somebody who has a job. I want them to have a career that they're really passionate about. Somebody who's a good communicator. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I even hear people say, well, I want a partner who's really connected to their family, who really values family. there are many amazing people that aren't necessarily very close with their family for various reasons. And they're great. They know how to be in a relationship. That doesn't mean because they don't have a close relationship with their family that they are going to be less likely to have a healthy relationship. It's a barrier that this person's in their mind, they're assuming something and generalizing that idea, which limits them, right? They're missing out on potential. So yeah, people have ideas in their mind and they stick to it rigidly. So you want to think about being fluid and being open, saying yes to opportunities. It's not going to hurt you to go on a first date, you know, one date with somebody that you're not sure about. Like maybe they have a few extra pounds or maybe they're in a career that you don't really like. But like, go for it. Why not? You never know. They may know somebody that may even be a match for you.
Mm. What do you say to people who are ending a relationship or have ended a relationship and want to start dating again? What should the timeline be for them?
So it depends how long their relationship was. So if
is there a formula?
Yeah. I just go on, you know, like if somebody's in a 12-year relationship, I would say at least 1 to 2 years of just taking time to find themselves again, to heal from the relationship, to self-reflect and think about ways in which, you know, they could be better in the next relationship. Because with each relationship, we learn about ourselves and we learn about what it takes to be in a relationship. And we certainly, you know, it takes two, right? So we all have our part and our contribution. And it's important to not jump from one to the next and give yourself time to think about what your contribution was and how you might be able to do a better job next time. Most relationships that I sort of, when I've been interviewing for years, and I'll ask people to share with me your relationship history, duration of time. And often there's, you know, many 3-year relationships and 5 year, I would say 3 and 5 year. So if somebody's in a relationship for 3 years, I would say a year, you know, take a little bit of time.
So I'm asking for a friend. let's say the last time you dated, you're getting out of a long-term relationship, and the last time you dated was like pre-Tinder. What would you tell somebody about sort of what the landscape of dating looks like today?
Oh, first I'd say, let's take a deep breath. Very different and challenging in ways that you can't imagine. I would say that you just have to be ready to put your protective suit on and to be ready to reach out to a lot of people. If you're really going to be proactive and you're going to be winking and messaging people online, to know that you're probably not going to hear back from many people. That's common. And that you may get excited about a date that you're planning and the same day they just either they cancel last minute, or you're talking about it and you're following up with them about actually nailing the details down and they don't get back to you. So I would just prep them. They just need to know that this is commonplace and that it's not a reflection on them in any way. This is just the etiquette today in online dating. We got to prepare people so that they know what they're getting into. And they may opt out. I have so many clients now and, you know, both coaching clients and even therapy clients, and matchmaking clients that are just offline. They're not doing it anymore.
So do you think it's sort of like the bloom is off the rose? Is it kind of, are we like
at the end of online dating?
Yeah. Is that it?
Have we come full circle and we're back to sock hops?
I mean, not entirely. I think we're still using it. I think many of us are still on there, but we're not really engaged in it. So we've got like a toe in and the rest of our body's out. It's just we're looking a little bit, but we're not really engaged in it. We're not taking it seriously. We don't really believe that we're going to meet somebody through that medium, but we don't want to entirely give up and get off because it feels like we'll never meet somebody. If we do that, we close the door to any opportunities. So we're staying in, but we're really not invested.
Oh God! And so, what's the solution besides becoming your client? What's the solution?
You got to get out there and engage. Join a gym. Join a gym that has like a boot camp gym or a CrossFit gym. I do CrossFit, and I see people matching all the time at competitions, connecting, making new friends, being set up. It's an opportunity to connect with people that have similar interests. You want to think about how to be creative around that and how to meet people off of the internet off of the apps. Mm-hmm. And the way to do that is to like join, for example, Sierra Club, right? They have riding groups, they have hiking groups, thinking about an interest that you have and maybe looking on Meetup, meetup.com. You know, it's all over mm-hmm. the country. People mm-hmm. are meeting up and connecting over similar interests. Spend more time engaging face to face with people and less time, you know, with social media and dating apps.
I'm a married lady, so this doesn't apply to me, but I've taken a lot of art classes and I've always felt like it's a real meat market. Like there's a lot of,
really?
A lot of romance blossoming around me. Yeah.
You know, I've never thought about that in art class
yeah,
as being
art class.
That's great. So there's another idea. Just get out there and be making an effort and feeling good about yourself. So you've got to be confident in order for people to notice you. People notice confident people. So just first look at yourself, figure out how you can strengthen who you are and be more confident, and then get out there.
Welcome to Three Ingredient Happy Hour, where Life Hackers food editor Claire Lower teaches you to make a fast, easy, delicious cocktail with, yes, just three ingredients that will get you wasted, but not in a messy way. Claire, what are we drinking today?
When people talk about romantic beverages, they often talk about wine or fancy drinks with lots of fruit or supposed aphrodisiacs. But nothing kills the mood like waiting for your date to fumble around, squeezing citrus, and getting syrup everywhere. To me, there is nothing more seductive than a perfect martini. It's hard not to imagine James Bond in a tux holding a crystal clear martini in a coupe, even though he ordered them incorrectly.
Vodka martini, shaken, not stirred.
Making a simple, clean martini makes you look cool. There are a lot of different ways to make a martini. Even though it's a simple beverage with barely three ingredients, it can be easy to get overwhelmed. But it's just a drink, and it's one that's not hard to master. All you need is gin, vermouth, and a lemon or an olive. First, don't go crazy with fancy, super flavorful gin. What you want is a London Dry gin. I like Tanqueray, or if you want to spend a little more cash, Tanqueray 10. Also, don't be afraid of vermouth. It's an important part of the cocktail. I feel like there's this sort of toxically masculine trend of trying to add as little vermouth as possible to show that you are a true fan of gin. But vermouth is good, and the combination of it and the gin is what makes a martini so delightful. Dolan Dry is perfectly serviceable here, but the main thing with vermouth is that you want it to be fresh, as it does oxidize over time. Once open, you can keep it in the fridge for about a month, but it's not martini worthy after that. Ratio-wise, it's really up to you. It should be a small drink, about 3 ounces in total. I like a 5-to-1 martini, and I like a 3-to-1 martini. For 5-to-1, you want 2.5 ounces of gin and 1/2 ounce of vermouth. For 3-to-1, it's 2.25 and 3/4. Make sure you have your glasses chilled. Just pop them in the freezer. Pouring a cold drink into a warm glass is so, so sad. Also, and I cannot stress this enough, do not shake your martini. You will water it down too much. Just stir it over ice until the stirring glass becomes too cold to hold comfortably. Take a little taste with a straw to make sure it's diluted enough to temper the harshness of the ethanol, then strain it into that chilled coupe glass and garnish with either a strip of lemon zest or an olive if you prefer. It takes all of 3 minutes, looks super suave, and is guaranteed to impress your date.
We're absolute monsters online. We're rude and mean and petty and do dumb stuff. In Tech Etiquette, we explore burning questions about tech in an effort to instill some order in the digital universe. Today's question, how should one behave on Tinder?
I'm speaking with etiquette author, great-grandson of Emily Post, and co-host of the podcast, Awesome Etiquette, Daniel Post-Senning. Dan, thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to talk to you today about etiquette on dating apps because I think, as everyone knows, it's a total mess.
I think it can feel that way, but I tell you, I hear so many success stories. I joke with people. I'm the last person I know who didn't meet his wife online.
That's encouraging, I think.
I think it has to be. And like so much of our world, it's always changing. And at the same time, the importance of relationships and how we treat each other, which I think of as the tenets of all good etiquette really do stay the same, even as we move from one generation to another and into a brave new technologically advanced world.
So the platform is different, but the fundamentals should be the same.
Absolutely.
I think that's true. And I don't feel as negatively on this topic as a lot of people I know, but I was chatting with friends prepping for this interview. And as soon as you bring up the way people behave on Tinder or any dating app, the floodgates completely open. There are so many horror stories. To me, I mean, dating has always been fraught. It's always going to be fraught. But things seem to have maybe gotten a lot worse now that we do it online. Why do you think that is?
I like the premise of your question. I do think this is sort of emotionally charged territory, and there's going to be highs and lows associated with it. There were dating horror stories when people left messages on cassette tapes on people's answering machines and when people had to communicate through chaperones. But it is true that there are challenges that technology and any mediated communication present. And I'm really thinking about the challenges to empathy, our ability to read how our actions are impacting other people, how they affect them. And that distance, I wouldn't say encourages bad behavior, but it can make it easier. It can make the consequences feel less real or relevant to the person who's doing something. That is tough.
How can you kind of break that spell for yourself and remember that there is a human who is maybe looking to find love on the other end of your, you know, three dots?
This is, it's such, in some ways, it's such boring advice, but I think picturing yourself being there with them can really help. I tell people when they're writing a business email, imagine the person you're writing it to is sitting in the office. Imagine that you are reading it to them. So just taking that moment to imagine that other person, even visualize them if that's what it takes. And it seems like a big ask. It can just be a quick reminder, something you just tell yourself, this is a real person on the other end of this. The other little trick that I remind people is sometimes imagine a third party bearing witness to what you're doing. Imagine, again, if I'm talking to someone who's writing an important business email, I say your mother sitting there and that you would read it to her as well as to the person who's going to receive it or your boss. In this case, maybe it's a friend of yours or a friend of theirs or someone you know in common or someone who helps introduce just a little bit of accountability. That person, and this is a piece of advice I like to offer, have a friend when you're online dating, have someone you talk about what you're doing with. Enjoy it, make it into a process where you're not doing it in isolation. And even if that person's not actually there with you while you build out your profile or reply to messages, think of that person and that can help also.
I love that because the thing that I think about a lot is I think a lot of these issues would be solved. I mean, not all of them because people don't always act well regardless, but if you just behaved as you would if you had mutual friends or like a shared social circle with the person.
Exactly. This world is smaller than we imagine. It's amazing where that overlap appears. And it's not all about negative consequences. Oftentimes, it's about the benefits that can be reaped, the rewards that are out there. There are several people in my life who I kind of play that role of the dating, I wouldn't call it advisor, but just sort of observer, consult. And
conciliary.
If we're so successful, maybe. But I was hearing a story just a day or two ago about a date that went really well. The person I was talking to had enjoyed the company of the person they met. There wasn't any chemistry. They didn't imagine themselves getting serious with that person. But the thing she said to me was, you know, I've got some friends who would really like this guy. And he made a really good impression on me. I'm trying to figure out if it would be appropriate, how I could let him know that I think I know some people who might be a good fit or match for him. And we ended up deciding that was probably going to be tough for her to do, but that's where her mind was.
Well, this actually leads into a question that I have been wanting to ask you. So I have a pet theory about this, that a lot of the worst behavior that you hear about on dating apps comes from people not wanting to feel like they're being mean. In prepping for this, two different friends told me almost identical stories about having had a really great first date with someone. Person followed up right away. They were going back and forth. And then the person either disappeared just on their own or when it came time to plan a second date, they disappeared. And I think there's a lot of this. People lead each other on a little bit instead of just saying, hey, I had a great time. I don't see a love connection. It was really nice to meet you.
I couldn't agree more. I hear very similar stories. I mean, everyone's heard about the ghosting phenomenon, yes. The people that just disappear or vanish. And how hurtful that can be. And I think it's why we hear about it too, because it is painful. And this is a place where I think really traditional etiquette can teach us something. And when I think about etiquette, I think about relationship skills. And relationships have arcs. There are transitional moments. There are key moments, critical moments. When you meet someone for the first time, when you go from one type of communication to another, you meet someone in person, now is the first time you're exchanging phone calls, emails, letters, whatever it is, letters. I'm really dating myself now. But goodbyes and partings are also really important. And people don't always handle goodbyes and partings well in any situation. When you're talking about people's feelings and dating, that mistake can, again, feel really hurtful. Just saying goodbye can provide that, what do we call it, the conclusion?
Closure.
The closure, exactly, that is oftentimes so important to people.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the gulf between thinking, did they get hit by a bus or did they really hate me, instead of just, you know, hey, I wasn't feeling it. Like, at least you have information to work with.
Or I'm dating. I had dates with three people, and this one was just phenomenal, and I'm going to pursue that. But I had a really lovely time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And it's true when people receive invitations. The failure to respond is the biggest mistake. Say, yes, I'm going to come. Say, no, I'm not going to go. But just don't say nothing. The question mark is the most difficult thing for a host to manage. And when I'm encouraging people to make that reply, I say, you know, I know hearts are going to break all over the world. I'm not even talking about dating, but it's okay to say no to people. In fact, that's gives the other person the credit of being able to hear that and deal with it, because they deserve it.
So as the etiquette expert, what is the best way to tell someone that you don't want to go out with them again?
You want to think about how the relationship has proceeded to that point. If it's really early on, it's the early phases, you've just exchanged some messages, you're feeling each other out, you start to get a sense that this isn't going to go anywhere, reply in the medium that you've been communicating in. So if that's a messaging component of the app or service that you're using, it's fine just to send them a message and say, you know, I don't think this is going to go anywhere for me, but thank you so much. If you've met someone in person maybe one time, you want to escalate that a little bit. You want to, maybe if you've communicated via phone a few times, make a phone call. Sometimes a message can be enough, a text, if that's the way you've been communicating. If you've established more of a relationship, if you've gone out a few times, if there's a reasonable expectation that's built up that you're going to see each other again, then you want to acknowledge that. You want to say, you know, I know we talked about doing something next weekend, but I'm thinking that I'm going to pursue something else, or I'm not interested in pursuing this further. So you acknowledge that that expectation that has grown as part of closing out whatever it is that's happening. And then a more serious breakup requires a more serious conversation. And that's where we both get a good laugh over that feeling of closure.
Yeah.
Because you're not responsible for managing someone else's feelings after a breakup or a parting, but you are responsible for acknowledging what has happened when you part ways.
I want to get into some more nitty-gritty dating questions. I think a big issue that one sees on Tinder is profiles. Like, when I talk to friends about it, even more than people behaving badly, you hear just a litany of bad things that people do in their profiles with how they present themselves. What do you think is the best way to represent yourself appropriately?
I want to give you the good, solid answer, but I'm so curious.
What have you been hearing? Well, there are a lot of things. And this is understandable if you've been through the ringer and dating a lot and nothing's really working for you, but people get really defensive. Like, they're mad at past people they've dated, and they start with a litany of things that they don't want, whether that's qualities in a person or I could never date someone who likes XYZ random thing, which is, it's just a way to shut people out. It's a huge turnoff for most people. Leaning too much on pop culture references is a big one. I was talking to a friend who said, you know, liking The Office isn't a substitute for having a personality. And ultimately, if you have chemistry with someone, it doesn't really matter if you like the same TV. And you just see cliches over and over again, like people saying looking for someone to have adventures with, or talking about how much they like whiskey and coffee. And it just, I'm not sure how everyone landed on the same list of things, but it comes up a lot and people get really frustrated by it.
So the big broad advice oftentimes is applicable. And one of the things that we tell people, no matter who we're talking to, is be honest. It's a core tenet of all good etiquette: consideration, respect, and honesty. And that honesty is your friend. It'll keep you out of trouble, but it also is a real guide. If you're representing yourself with a realistic honesty, it sets you up well for whatever happens in the future. If you always tell the truth, you never have to remember anything. And that is a liberation. Be honest about what you're looking for. Be honest with yourself and you're going to be in better shape. It's going to be easier to be honest with other people. You know, I'm really not looking for something serious right now. You know what? Actually, I'm looking to get married. I'm ready. When you're building that profile, when you talk about the picture, it's really important. You want to represent yourself well, but you don't want to be deceptive. If you're going to include a picture, choose something that's relatively current that emphasizes you. Again, you can avoid those cliches, but if you want to make a nod to your interest or your lifestyle, that's okay also, but it's not your cat. It's not your pet that people are interested in. It's you.
Counterpoint, I find having a picture of my cat in my profile is a great conversation starter.
As long as you're there too.
Yeah.
I like your point about interest, and this is a general etiquette point also. My mother used to say, be interested, it makes you more interesting. Cultivate a curiosity about the world that you live in, it will serve you well. Have interests, have hobbies, and have them be your own, and don't be afraid to share them, to talk with other people about them. It really is the key to not being bored and not being boring.
This leads into, I think, the issue of conversation, which is a huge one on these platforms. Is it just a basic ground rule, ask questions?
You're anticipating my favorite piece of advice. Asking questions is a skill that's part of active listening. And in any conversation, people are often focused on, what do I say? How do I participate? And oftentimes the best way to participate is to not say something, but to be a good listener. And that can be reflecting back what you're hearing. And you do want to participate well. You want to bring your lively enthusiasm as well as your capacity to receive and absorb information. But it's a balance between the two, and you want to be checking both sides of that equation. So yes, listening, yes, asking questions, but also being willing to share about yourself, to open up. I tell people there's a certain generosity of spirit that will reap rewards in life. And for some people, that's the bigger challenge. For some people, it's remembering, a little bit like me, to open up the space for someone else to participate also.
Yeah, I think it's a yes and kind of dialogue. It's a common affliction, not to make it too gendered, but you hear about it a lot with straight men, that they just don't ask a single question. A friend has a piece of advice she gives to male friends. If the conversation doesn't feel like it's going anywhere with a woman, go back through your chats and see when the last time was that you asked her anything.
Ah, I like that advice. I'm going to make a little note here myself.
But also, sometimes I just want to throw my phone across the room. If you ask someone a thoughtful question, then get an answer that doesn't leave you any room to respond. So if we were to be so bold as to lay out the definitive ground rules for how people should behave on dating apps, where would we start?
I think you've got to start with the golden rule, that you want to treat other people the way you would want to be treated. And it's a big challenge. There's been some version of the advice, be the change you want to see in the world, for a long time. But it's really important. If you don't think this is a space where people are behaving well, the person whose behavior you're going to have the most impact on, the place you're going to be able to make a difference, is in how you interact and engage. And whatever happens, you're going to feel better about it. So start there. You're going to put yourself in a really good place. All right, what's our next tip?
I think that's totally true. And it also, to a degree, I mean, not always, but you often, the energy that you put out towards people is what you end up getting mirrored back. So if you go into it kind of feeling like shitty or unfriendly about it, there's a very good chance that's what you're going to get.
Or with a spirit of hopelessness.
Yes. And I liked what you said earlier, too, about just in all fronts, in your profile, in your conversation, just be honest.
And that can be tough. Oftentimes that honesty starts with being honest with yourself. But if you can do that, then being honest with other people really sets you up well for whatever happens, good, bad, or awesome.
Do you think people should not be on these apps if they don't really know what they want or aren't totally honest with themselves?
No, I think being questioning, you can be honest about not knowing. I think that's a really reasonable thing also. I'm not exactly sure what I'm looking for, but I'm looking for, boy, cliche, adventure. but whatever it might be, I think there's room there. I don't think that you have to have a set of goals that you can write down on a piece of paper in order to participate well.
Yeah, I think that's completely true. That makes me feel better about some of my own behavior.
The other thing I'd conclude with saying is that I think sometimes people think this is frivolous or unimportant. And I'd just like to say, I think there's almost nothing that's more important. Romance is, it's part of life. And how we find each other, how we connect with each other is really important. It's important how we treat each other. And the world's not going to continue if people aren't able to meet each other and find love. So I want to wish everyone out there who's doing it good luck. You are pursuing a noble course.
I love that. I think that's a perfect place to leave it. Just because it's on an app doesn't mean it's not your real life. And where can our listeners hear more from you?
My cousin Lizzie Post and I co-host a podcast called Awesome Etiquette. It's a weekly Q&A show where we answer listeners' questions about all kinds of etiquette.
And now it's time for the upgrade of the week. Every week, we talk about that one tiny thing that's making a big difference in our lives. This week, we're joined by Dr. Frankie. Melissa, what's your upgrade this week?
I'm going to recommend an Etsy store.
Ooh.
Yeah. I've been feathering the nest. Nesting. It's winter. And I have become a tiny bit obsessed with turning my apartment into a jungle, and therefore I need plants, and I live in a city where plants are very expensive. There is a seller on Etsy named LA Plantaholic. And I got a very, very trendy, gigantic split-leaf Monstera Deliciosa.
Wow.
For $20. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up, because
exactly
it's a very trendy plant. And it's the most beautiful plant. It looks like I've been cultivating it for decades. $20 came in the mail.
Amazing.
Highly recommended. LA Plantaholic.
Nice.
It sounds
That's
fancy.
A good upgrade.
I mean, Plantaholic sounds like a problem, but it's a problem I'm ready to have.
I'm so jealous you can have plants. My cat would just eat that plant and then throw it up all over the place. It would not be an upgrade.
I'll take your plants.
Take my plants. Anyway.
Well, I kill all my plants, so I have none.
I'm going to kill this one, but for now, it's amazing.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Dr. Frankie, what's your upgrade?
So, plantaholic, alcoholic, along the similar lines, I'm joking. I decided to not drink nearly as much, not that I was ever an alcoholic, but I've been doing CrossFit pretty regularly for 8 years now. And there are plenty of people that are really committed to it and don't really drink alcohol. And I was, you know, maybe having 4 or 5 glasses of wine a week. And I just pretty much cut it out. And I feel so much better. It's been 3-4 months now that I maybe, you know, I'll have a glass every other week. And it has made a huge difference in my life. My skin is clearer. I sleep better. I have more energy. Yeah. So I pretty much cut alcohol out of my life.
The sleep connection is huge. If I have a second glass of wine, I'm up in the middle of the night. It's inevitable.
Exactly. Yeah. Because your body metabolizes, right, the sugar, and then you're up after 3 hours. So I let it go.
Good. Good upgrade.
Alice, what's your upgrade?
So this is something I've been doing for a long time, but I've sort of made it a more concrete decision to stop wearing heels. I'm just done with them because they're stupid. They cause pain. You hobble around, you get blisters, and there's no need for them. So I'm done. There's an Instagram account that I've kind of obsessed with called On Brogue or Ed Brogue, but I think it's On, E-N-B-R-O-G-U-E. This woman, British Instagrammer who only wears flats and has these incredibly inspiring shoes. I've become kind of obsessed with her shoe choices. They're beautiful.
Oh, Hannah Rochelle?
Yes, her name is Hannah Rochelle. So that's my upgrade. I'm not wearing heels anymore.
She does have nice shoes.
She has nice shoes. I mean, I'm going to wear like an inch heel, like a maybe...
A kitten heel?
Inch and a half. No kitten heels. No kitten heels. But like, you know, my shoes now probably have like a half an inch or an inch or something.
You're going to stop
I'm not
going to
go
pumps.
Weird and start wearing those earth shoes with the negative heels. I'm not doing that.
A fit-flop? Will you wear a fit-flop?
I might wear a fit-flop. I will not wear a fit-flop.
And that's our show. The Upgrade is produced by Rachel Withers. Our executive director of audio is Mandana Mofidi. Our theme music is by Slowbiz, and Brad Fisher mixed the episode.
If you've got thoughts about The Upgrade, email us at upgrade@lifehacker.com, or you could leave us a voice message at 347-687-8109.
Follow Lifehacker on Twitter at Lifehacker and on Facebook at facebook.com/lifehacker. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.